Good afternoon. I'd like to call the meeting of the House Military Veterans Affairs Committee to order. It is now 1:46 p.m. Thursday, January 25th, in the State Capitol Gruenberg Room, number 120. Present, we have Representative Sadler, Representative Parrish, Vice Chair, Representative Ledoux, myself, Representative Tuck, Representative Reinbold, and Representative Sponholz. So record reflect that we do have a quorum to conduct business. Please silence or turn off your electronic devices. Before we begin, I would also like to thank Brian Glenn, along with Christy Blair, that's handling our house records for us, and Kelsey Goodell in the back there, who is moderating the meeting, and our committee aide, Kendra Kloster. Today we have two items on the agenda. We're first going to be taking up the Hmong Memorial Burial Rites by Representative Tarr, HJR 17. After that, we'll be doing naming the portions of Veterans Highways by Representative Eastman, House Bill 178. This is the first hearing for HJR 17. It is my intention to hear this resolution, take up public testimony, and then hold for amendments until the next meeting. HB 178 was heard last session. However, since quite a bit of time has passed and there was a lot of work done in the interim, I thought it would be nice for the committee to get a quick overview on that. And there is also a committee substitute that may be introduced today. Okay, first up, HJR 17. Let the record reflect that we have Representative Rauscher joining us as well, so we have a full committee today. HJR 17, the Hmong Veterans Military Burial Rites, Representative Tarr and her staff, Magdalena, if you will, go ahead and put yourself on the record and provide us the overview.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Good afternoon, Representative Garen Tarr from Anchorage, joined here by staff.
Magdalena Oliveros. To Representative Tarr.
Thank you so much for your attention to HJR 17 this afternoon. And hopefully some of this information will seem familiar because we appreciated you taking up HB 125 last year that also addressed a similar issue with honoring the service of our Hmong veterans here in Alaska. And so just as a sort of a review of what brings us to the conversation today, and this language is also included in the beginning whereas clauses in the resolution, but members might remember that when we were engaged in the Vietnam War, that the CIA, you know, reached out to the Hmong people in Laos and asked for their assistance during the war. They joined in our effort, and they fought alongside the American soldiers. They helped along the Ho Chi Minh Trail. They helped with downed, folks who had been shot down in planes and, you know, getting them safely to medical treatment and things like that. They fought honorably, just as our American soldiers did, and it's estimated, and here we have as many as 100,000 Hmong soldiers were recruited and trained. If you go to page 2, line 7, approximately 40,000 Hmong soldiers lost their lives defending democracy, and so they took significant loss of life for that service alongside the American soldiers. What happened as a result of that, of course, when the war ended and the communist regime took over, they were no longer welcome in their homeland. That put them in a status of becoming refugees. Many traveled to Thailand first and then on to various locations, including the United States, and that's what brought some of these folks to Alaska. So now we have a strong Hmong American population in Alaska, very proud to represent thousands of those Hmong Alaskans. I think the Vice Chair, Representative Ledoux, as well as Representative Sponholz, and possibly even Representative Sadler, also have some large Hmong populations in East Anchorage, and so very, very much have appreciated getting to learn about this important history. And what is disturbing to me at this point is the United States is still not made true on the promise made to those soldiers when they fought alongside our American soldiers, that they would be granted full veteran recognition. Last year, we had the bill that addressed having the veteran's designation on their driver's license. So, you know, I call it like the, you know, get the discount at Denny's or the military appreciation kind of thing. And so happy to do that. This piece of it is another piece that's been very important to those veterans, and that's the ability to be buried at Arlington National Cemetery so they can be buried alongside other soldiers. And one individual, because this has been an effort, I want to honor Senator Murkowski and Senator Sullivan at the federal level. They've taken leadership on this, as have representatives from California, where there's a large Hmong population. And in an article, reading one of the Hmong soldiers alive today says, burial rights would mean getting the respect and the dignity that he and his fellow fighters feel they've earned. And so I think it's important when we make a commitment that we honor that commitment. And that's what we're calling on today with this resolution that, of course, you know, would be the Alaska legislature's, you know, voice or, you know, giving, you know, support to this idea and this request on behalf of the Hmong soldiers. And it would be forwarded to our congressional delegation. And perhaps, you know, if enough of us do these type of resolutions in enough states, perhaps we'll be able to, you know, tip over that edge and be successful with that federal legislation that would be necessary for them to have those burial rights. And with that, I think we'll close my comments unless there are questions. And I just wanted to mention, I know in the public testimony that we have Mai Zhang and Mr. Lee, himself a Hmong veteran, and May Ramirez Young, whose father's a Hmong veteran. And so I know they'll be both testifying. And Mr. Bob Dole is present here from DMVA in the audience. So hopefully all of them will be able to, you know, add additional information or answer any questions that have come up or information I haven't covered. And I do wanted to just get that in because at 2 o'clock, I apologize, I have to step out to another meeting. So Magdalena will certainly be here and can take notes and maybe prepare to ask some questions. But, Mr. Chairman, you said your intention is to hold it today. So what we thought is she'd be able to just take notes of any questions people had, and we'd make sure to follow up before the next time you scheduled a meeting for this matter.
Okay. Thank you very much, Representative Tarr. We also have Verdi Bowen with Veterans Affairs Administration. Okay. It's also online with us. Representative Sadler.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Immodesty demands I mentioned that it was my bill to get the Veterans Driver's License designation, and I think we added the Hmong designation as well last year. I think that was it. But I wanted to ask a question. You had mentioned, Representative Tarr, that it was important to give veteran status so that Hmong veterans could be buried at Arlington National Cemetery. Mm-hmm. We have Fort Richardson National Cemetery. Mm-hmm. Would that veteran designation also allow that honor for people to be buried in the Fort Rich Cemetery as well?
If I could defer that question to the department, I'd like them to just be able to speak about and any differences about any of those opportunities, if that would be okay, Mr. Chairman. Thank you.
Any further questions? Representative Ledoux.
This isn't really a question. It's more like a comment. Well, it is a comment. When General Vang Pao, who is the leader of the Hmong soldiers, died probably about 5 or 6 years ago. It was the request of him and his family that he be buried at Arlington. And that was denied. I believe Senator Lisa Murkowski went to bat trying to see whether or not they could get permission for him there. And even with her intervention, it didn't happen.
Thank you for that comment. Any other comments or questions? Representative Parrish.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. In answer to, well, in an attempt at an answer to Representative Sadler's question, I'm looking in the third section of my book here at S-1179, which is amending Title 38 of the United States Code to authorize the Secretary of Veterans Affairs to inter in national cemeteries individuals who supported the United States and Laos during the Vietnam Wars or for other purposes. So it seems like it would cover any national cemetery.
Mm-hmm. And through the chair, to Representative Paris, I do think that's right, and I just hope that can be confirmed by the people who are much more knowledgeable on the details than I.
Mm-hmm. Thank you very much. Any further questions or comments? All right, well, I am going to go ahead and open it up for public testimony. Okay, public testimony is now open. Anyone here in the audience that would like to testify on this resolution? Yes, feel free. Mr. Dole. And, of course, please state your name and affiliation for the record.
For the record, Deputy Commissioner Bob Dole, State of Alaska Department of Military and Veterans Affairs. For the same reasons that the Alaska Veterans Advisory Council supported Hmong recognition last year, the department supports this bill. The Hmong were integral and key to saving downed American aviators during the Vietnam War. On a good mission, 10 Hmong would perish for every American that was saved. That was a good mission. In short, Hmong died defending and trying to save American lives. If they died with American lives, they should get to rest in the same hallowed ground as those American warriors. We're talking about a group now that this is 50 years, half a century that has gone on. We believe it's time to move forward. It took an extended period, not as long, but an extended period of for recognition of the Filipinos that served with us in World War II. We believe this group is analogous. Yesterday, an important thing happened to many Alaskan families. 45 Alaska Air National Guard airmen returned in the 210th Rescue Squadron from a deployment in harm's way. One of the reasons they were able to return was the support of some of those in the deployed location they went to. We strongly support this, and to answer the question, National Cemetery eligibility would apply to Fort Richardson National Cemetery, too, so we could visit those local heroes here, too. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you very much. Any questions for our testifier? Thank you so much. Oh, Representative Ledoux.
What exactly is the pushback from Congress about this? This actually seems like kind of a no-brainer.
Through the chair, Representative Ledoux, Verdi Bowen may be more prepared to speak of this. Neither of us are in Congress, and I don't know if Verdi has any aspirations. I do not. I believe there is concern that the Hmong did not raise their hand and take the same oath to support and defend the United States as U.S. service members do is probably the core doctrinal reason, but if Verdi speaks after me, he may be able to expound on that.
Okay. Thank you.
Any further questions for Deputy Commissioner? Okay, thank you so much. Appreciate it. And next on our list is Verdi Bowen. Verdi, are you there?
Yes, Mr. Kansas. I'm on the line.
Okay, feel free. We're ready for your testimony.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair, and all committee members for allowing me to speak on behalf of the Hmong recognition. First of all, I'll start off with answering the question. I actually don't know because I haven't been able to see. I've watched this each year get the committee and then disappear off the committee. And it seems to not get enough support each year to get through the House and the Senate. It doesn't make any sense. And it could go back to the statement that Mr. Goel had made that they did not raise their right hand. But I believe that we need to look at something different here. And the Vietnamese had a 100,000-man army that was shooting through Laos. And the only thing that kept that 100,000-man army sort of in check most of the time was a 30,000-man Hmong army that was managed by General Powell. The interesting thing about that is that Edgar Buell, who was the CIA field agent that was working with them, that helped bring them in, believed clear up until he left the CIA that they should be recognized. And it didn't make any sense that they were not recognized to be buried in our cemeteries. But it goes a little bit further when it comes to their enlistment. Most of the Hmong, the way they were enlisted is that they would take an M1 Garand, which is a fairly large rifle, take it into the schoolhouse, put a line on the wall, and any child that was above that line was automatically enlisted in the Army. And as they lost large amounts of people in battle, the next thing they would do was they'd go to a smaller rifle, which was the M1 Carbine, draw a line on the wall, and those children above that line was now enlisted. So there would not be a way to properly recognize those people through a signed document. What we have actually done in my office through the state of Alaska has got the Hmong community to identify those members that are that have and are members that have served in the Hmong military. And so we do actually have a list of those members, and right now it's 25 is the number. And you know, Arlington has already recognized the Hmong. They have a memorial that was dedicated in 1997 and to recognize the services of the Hmong. And that, to me, leads me to believe that in 1997 they should have allowed them to be buried or interred in our national cemeteries at that same time, because that's the first step in letting people know that these people have very well-deserved burials within our national cemeteries. The last thing that I wanted to bring up was the fact that that we need to move on this faster before we lose all of these people. I'd hate to have it be like our Alaska Territorial Guard members, where we waited 70 years, and then by the time we started issuing discharges, it was just like catching the wind. We were unable to get the discharge to the member before they passed away. And so it is, I believe that it was great expedience. We need to help provide a reference point for our senators to take to the House and the Senate and ask for this honor for those that have served for us.
Thank you very much. We have some questions. Representative Sponholz?
Representative, in fact, I think that Mr. Bohm may have just answered my question. I was wondering how it is that we identify who our Hmong veterans are, given that they weren't, you know, enlisted and they're not on the paperwork, which may also be one of the problems folks in Congress are having. But it sounds to me like we've been sort of working directly with the Hmong community. Would you say that that's sort of the basic strategy we've been using?
Through the chair to Reverend Sponholz, yes, that's exactly. We actually set up the same kind of program that we did for the Alaska Territorial Guard members that allowed the officers that served in the Hmong Army to identify those that have served, and it really was very helpful. And we accomplished that task last year in preparation for the driver's license identification.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Representative Parrish.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. It sounds more like we or our proxies were going into schoolhouses and conscripting kids rather than merely enlisting them. Would you care to comment on the difference?
Through the chair to Representative Parrish, in actuality it was a draft, if you will. You can call it conscript, but it was an involuntary draft. And as they identified those individuals, they would take them out and train them. Sometimes they were trained on the trails as they were going to defend or to rescue downed pilots.
Follow up, Mr. Chair.
Follow up.
What efforts have been made to go beyond recognition on a license plate or for a grave plot? But what efforts have been made towards extending to them all the benefits available to a veteran who voluntarily or involuntarily entered United States service?
Through the chair to Representative Parrish, to this date, the only two items that we have worked with is the driver's license and the burials.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Is that true nationwide, or are there efforts in other states?
Through the chair to Representative Perry, in California, they have Hmong Veteran Memorial Day. I have to apologize because we do have Hmong Memorial Day here in Alaska, which is in May. California has done that, and so has I want to think it's Minnesota that has the next largest Hmong population. They have also done the same. They've set aside a day for their Memorial Day. But each state in themselves have tried to do exactly what we're doing to support an overall national program to have them buried or interred in our national cemetery.
Thank you, and thank you, Mr. Chair.
You're welcome. Is there any other questions? All right, thank you so much for your testimony. We really appreciate it. Is Vicky Jo Kennedy in the audience?
She
she was.
Okay. Moving online, we have May Ramez Zhang. Are you available?
Yes, I'm available.
Okay, feel free to share your testimony.
So, hi, my name is May Ramirez Zhang, and for the same reason, we honor our fallen heroes, those who serve our country, those who fought to protect, those who paved the way to give our country, our people, the life, liberty, and freedom, and justice for all. I speak not only on behalf of myself, but on behalf of every veteran, dead or alive, that we have honored those who fought long and hard to protect our country. This war left
May,
on
May, can you, I don't know if you're on speakerphone, but can you either get close to your microphone or take us onto off of speaker?
Yes.
Where you're breaking
in.
Can
you hear me now?
Yeah. That's much better. Thank you. And just for the record, real quick, I'm turning the gavel over to the vice chair. I got to step out for a moment. So go ahead. Feel free. Continue.
This war has not only scars in our hearts, it sacrificed our people, and it is part of history, a part of me, a part I didn't know about. It's part of history that was not taught in school, and a part of a war that so many were against. However, it was among people who fought and continued to fight the secret war that no one spoke about. Growing up, I knew very little about this war. But had I known sooner about it, I think I could have showed myself a little better with those that have wounded me. People have told me to go back to my country, told me to go back to where I came from, and I was very confused because I was born here. I was different. But it is very clear now that the United States of America is my country, and those that I do not look like didn't like that I was here. But this country is this country that my father fought for, and being old enough to understand the importance that our people played and the reason the wrong people are present in the United States today. This may not matter much to a lot of people or other generations even after this, but it directly impacts me because my father fought in this war. There have been many fought in the secret war that has already passed, and there is very that remains. I can't say that every wrong person who fought in the war wants to be buried at Arlington because there's superstitions about the function of burials, but my concern is not just about the burial of the wrong veteran of the Vietnam War at Arlington. It's about the honor and respect those fans do not receive, and not given the right of what was promised to them 4 to 5 decades ago. It shows how we as Americans perceive those who fought for us. Now, I am an American, and if we are what we say we are, we provide liberty, freedom, and justice for all. Not just for American-born soldiers, but for American-born soldiers who fought alongside American soldiers. If the United States is what we claim we are, then we would provide justice for all, including the heroes of the secret war. They too should be honored, even if they weren't born on the soil they fought and their families died for the soil. I've heard someone mention about the swearing of the Soldier's Creed, but, you know, reading through the Soldier's Creed, every American soldier has the same thought to this. You are an American soldier for war, you're not a member of a team. You serve the United States and the world. Army value. Okay. There's always you place your mission first. Never accept defeat. Never quit.
May, we're having difficulty. It's kind of breaking up. Are you on a cell phone or are you on a speaker?
I am on a cell phone. I'm on a cell phone, so if it's not playing well.
So it may be better, unless you can get to a landline, if your comments, maybe you could write them to us, because it's okay. Very difficult it's not coming through clearly with the cell phone, and we all want to be able to read your comments, and we really appreciate what your father did for this country, and we appreciate your coming out to testify.
Thank you. Is there a place that I can send this to, an email or contact person?
Yes, you can email it to Representative Tuck, and they'll be distributed to the entire committee.
Okay, is there a person I can contact to get that information, the contact information, because I don't have this information?
Just a second. We'll get you the email address to give it to.
Just rep.chris.tuck@aklegge.gov. It's our office number. You can also give her Chris Tuck's email.
Okay. The telephone number to call is 465-2095, and the email is rep.chris@aklegge.gov.
Thank you.
All right. Thank you very, very much. Take care. So the next person that I'm calling on to testify is Charlie Zhang. So, Mr. Zhang, can you tell where you're testifying from, and can you identify yourself on the record and tell us if you're affiliated with any organization?
I'm a Hmong veteran in California, in Juba City.
No.
What number?
It's fairly difficult to hear you, Mr. Zhang. What number are you calling in on?
Let's see. 53, my phone number?
No, not your phone telephone number. What number are you calling to? Because you're breaking up.
Oh. 907-563-9085.
Is that Anchorage
County? Let's take an at-ease while I try to figure out what's going on with the telephone lines.
And please
stay with us. Don't go anyplace. But
with all due respect, this has been happening the last 2 weeks. Every time they call the Anchorage LIO.
Okay, I'm going to go off the record right now.
Say it again.
Mr. Zhang, are you still with us? Mr. Zhang, are you still with us? Okay. All right, the next person is Passert Lee. Mr. Lee. Is Mr. Lee with us? No. At ease. No, they weren't on the phone. You can hear us. Can you call back? And then how about Mai Zhang? Is she... Mai, are you on the line?
Yes, I am.
Great. Mai, do you want to identify yourself and tell us if you're affiliated with any organization and let us know where you're calling from?
This is Mai Zhang. Mm-hmm. I'm calling from Anchorage, Alaska.
And are you calling in on a cell phone, Mai?
Yes.
Do you have a landline that you could call us on?
Oh, yes, I do.
Do you want to try calling us on the landline? Because it's really difficult to pick up for transcribing or for actually understanding your testimony when you're calling from the cell phone.
Can you hear me?
Are you on a landline now?
No, I could go on the landline.
If you could go on a landline, that would be really, really helpful.
Okay.
All right. We'll go at ease until Mai calls in on the landline. to go ahead.
Hello?
Hi. So you want to start with just identifying yourself, and then you can proceed with your testimony.
Okay. My name is Mary Jones. I live in Anchorage, Alaska. And I just have myself.
Okay. So do you want to give us your testimony?
My testimony is long distance, making me right. A lot of moms are fighting with the men war, and passing away a lot. The patients are talking a lot. And also that passed away some time ago, maybe.
All right. Do we have any questions for Mai? Mai, thank you very much. And can you let your husband, Passert, know that if he calls, we'll be glad to take his testimony now? Or both he's on the... Oh, great. All right. Yes. Thank you very much, Mai. Appreciate it. All right. Thank you. We've now got Passert Lee.
Yes.
Good afternoon, Passert. Do you want to identify yourself for the record and begin with your testimony?
Yeah, good afternoon, too. My name is Passert Lee. And I'm calling to testimony for the HJR 17 to be non-veteran bill right. But since 1961 to 75, American CIA, they have to recruit for the Mont-Sorge or the Motau and 10,000 people to help rescue American pilots, shut down the Ho Chi Minh of Vietnam. And also to protect the Highway 5, Highway 7, and Highway 4, for the community cannot go out for Laos to go down to Vietnam, South Vietnam. And said American CIA in South Vietnam lost 1,000 head. But during that time, the Hmong soldier or the Hmong Highlander soldier, we protect the Ho Chi Minh Trail of Vietnam. We have 36,000 soldiers die in the Vietnam War. But American CIA live in South Vietnam, they only die 58,000. If we do not protect the Ho Chi Minh Trail, maybe American CIA, they cannot die for the 363%, the 58,000. Maybe they die more than 367,000 for sure. But I hope to pass for the bill for the Hmong veterans of Alaska. They have a right to build right in this country. So thank you very much for the house and to support for the bill. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Mr. Lee. Do we have any questions for Mr. Lee? Well, thank you very much. Do we have Charlie Zhang on again? All right. Do we have anybody in the audience or anybody else online who wants to testify? All right. Well, I'm actually going to keep public testimony open in the hopes that we might be able to get Mr. Zhang at the next meeting. And so public testimony remains open. So do we have any comments from the committee on this bill? Representative Sadler.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I must ask the question. We heard from one of the first persons testifying and also from Mr. Verdi Bowen that there's an urgency in getting this passed so that appropriate recognition can be given to people while they're alive before they've all passed. I'm hoping we can pass this through expeditiously. I was going to make a motion that we move it out today, but I certainly want to have the opportunity to hear from everybody who wants to testify on this. So it's my hope that once we do hear public testimony, we can move this from committee expeditiously and get the recognition these assistants to our military deserve.
I think that is everybody's intent, Representative Sadler. So we are going to put this resolution aside right now, and please provide any amendments to Representative Tuck's office by Monday, January 29th at noon. Mm-hmm. So the next item on the agenda is HB 178, naming portions of Veterans Highways, and this is by Representative Eastman. And Representative Eastman, would you and Mr. McClure like to come to the table and please put yourself on the record and introduce HB 178?
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. I'm Representative David Eastman from District 10, and beside me is my aide, Mr. Jared McClure. HB 178 comes at the request of Alaska veterans, and as an Alaska veteran myself, I'm very glad to carry the bill. It is going to affect the six veterans memorials that currently exist here in Alaska, and I will let Mr. McClure explain the changes from the original draft to the proposed draft.
And I think before we do that, I'm going to tell you that there's a blank CS for HB 178, and the CS was sent out to committee members. And so do I have a motion to bring the CS for HB 178 version 30-LS0550/M before the committee for discussion?
I make a motion to bring the CS version 30-LS055/M before the committee for the purposes of discussion.
Thank you. Well, hearing no objections, we now have that before the committee. You may proceed, Representative Eastman or Mr. McClure, as the case may be.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Through the chair, my name is Jared McClure, staff to Representative David Eastman, House District 10. With your permission, I can cover some of the language changes from the initial version. On page 1, language was added to make sure that the veterans groups submitting names were actually recognized, 501c19 recognized groups, lines 6 through 12. On page 2, lines 1 through 5, was added language that made sure that if a living veteran's name was selected, the Department of Military and Veterans Affairs had to seek permission from that veteran to add their name to the list of names being sought to be honored. And lines 22 through 25 deal with the requirements that the signs be funded or DOT can't do the work. A little bit further on, bottom of the page, lines 31 through page 3's line 3, establishes the order of priority for the signs. And considering in page 3, lines 7 through 10 created a more specific definition of veteran for the purpose of this legislation and those who would be recognizable. And continuing in page 3, language was clarified in lines 11 through 14, making DOT the sole department responsible for handling the donations, gifts, and grants for funding. And I'd be happy to try and answer any questions you might have.
Do we have any questions from the committee? Representative Sadler.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Through the chair, Mr. McClure, had you considered expanding the definition of veterans to include Hmong veterans in this bill?
I don't believe we have considered that issue.
Thank you.
If I could just follow on that, as a sponsor, it would certainly be amenable to such an amendment.
Thank you, Representative Eastman. Do we have any further questions from the committee?
Madam Chair.
Go ahead, Representative Parrish.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So it seems like the I'm looking at Section 2 on page 3, AS 3705-146B, which expands the sources of revenue to DOT. Is that correct?
Through the chair, Representative Parrish, if I understand your question correctly, you're asking how the funds are being received by DOT. It's gifts, grants, donations, DOT. This is de minimis authority. There's no need for budget line items for to receive these funds.
Follow up, Madam Chair.
Go ahead.
Do you have an approximate ballpark of the funds which would be necessary to raise for to post such a sign or marker?
Through the chair, Representative Parrish, I should defer that to the department, I believe.
Are they on the line?
We have Mark Needholt from DOT, Bob Dole, Verdi Bowen, Dave Glenn, and Yukon Don Tan are all available for questions online. And I want to just take a brief at ease because I'm not seeing it come up on the screen. Back on record again. So, Mr. Needholt, did you hear that question?
Madam Vice Chair, I'm President.
Oh. Okay, thank you.
You better.
Yes, definitely, thank you.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair. For the record, my name is Mark Needholt, Chief of Design and Construction Standards for Statewide Department of Transportation and Public Facilities. To answer, through the chair, to answer the question, a standalone sign with a foundation, crash-worthy, all of the appurtenances that are necessary to preserve the safety of the traveling public, we're looking at about $2,500 approximately per installation. There can be economies of scale if we have more than one sign. There can be other economies if that sign is attached to a pre-existing structure.
Go ahead, Representative Parrish.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And that it looks like it's envisioned to cover the design, posting, and maintenance and replacement of the sign. What would happen if there were donations, say, to the value of $2,500, a sign were posted, and then, unfortunately, it were to fall into disrepair? Would it be repaired, or would you need to put out a second bid to raise funds to do so?
Through the chair, Representative Parrish, I believe the language in the bill restricts the department from performing any of those activities unless there's funding available. And the answer in terms of, you know, what does it cost or what has to happen, is it a new installation, that's dependent upon what the damage is. If the damage is just that the sign is weathered and no longer readable, it may be just replacing the sign blank. If the damage is that the post is struck by a motor vehicle, it can be, you know, much more significant than that. If the foundation is damaged, would be the next step. And ultimately, it could result in that entire cost of approximately $2,500 per event if the event was very severe and they had to start from scratch.
Representative Reingold.
Thank you, and I know this is it's on topic, but a little bit of a diversion. I knew Hans Raleigh, Trooper Hans Raleigh. He was killed in that domestic violence you know, state trooper that went in and got killed. He was a good friend of mine in high school. And basically, it bothers me every time I go by that way station. That sign is so weathered, and it's an honor that he's named after that. But that sign looks terrible. So I guess to me, it's just a quick look out of respect and honoring Hans. It how much would it cost just to put a sign there? I mean, the poles are there, everything's there. It's just a sign.
Through the chair, Representative Reinbold, the answer in terms of that sign blank, I don't have the number off the top of my head, but I think, and I'm qualifying that, I think that the sign blanks are in the neighborhood of $250 per square foot. So that sign is probably, it's a 24 by 36, I think, so a 6-square-foot sign. So that would be $1,500 for, if I did my math right, for that sign at $250 a square foot.
Through the chair.
Go ahead.
It's just the small brown one, you know. Okay. It's not big. And I guess what my question is I do signs all the time on the trails. And also, of course, we have signs that we have to deal with. Sometimes you can just reuse them and freshen them up. I mean, it just seems like you guys should have this down by now. I mean, no offense, but it sounds like a ridiculous number.
Through the chair, Representative Reinbold, I can only give you know what the cost is, and that includes all of the elements that are necessary. So if we need, you know, that's an amortized cost, an average cost, and we use that. It includes traffic control. It includes the time to get the crews out there to replace that sign. I mean, it's not just one piece in there. It includes assuring that the attachment is still compliant with traffic safety requirements. There's a number of elements. It's not the same as on a trail. And that cost is, no, that's the same cost that we look at if DOT staff does that, or that's the cost that we see when a contractor does that. And that $250 per square foot number, again, I'm pulling that off the top of my head. You know, I can confirm that and send it back to the committee chair if you would like. But that cost is what we experience when we bid those projects as well.
So Representative Reinbold, you're talking about a sign, it sounds like right now, which does not relate to this bill. And I'm sure that Mr. Niedholt would gladly talk to you after this committee meeting about that specific sign. But I really want to hold the comments and the committee hearing on this bill rather than
with all due respect, I was echoing off Representative Parrish's and the replacement if the signs got weathered. So I personally think it's completely relevant.
That's fine as long as we're talking about in general replacement of signs, not a specific sign that is not for a veteran for this bill.
It was just an example of how much it would cost, you know, and maybe it needs to be privatized. I don't know. But it just sure seems like a whole lot of money. $250, you know, dollars per square foot is a lot of money.
Did I see your hand up, Representative Rauscher?
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. I appreciate it. Through the chair, I was just wondering, I guess we don't have a direct size of the sign, correct?
Through the chair, the size of that sign is not identified in the bill. The sign would be subject, the bill refers to the Alaska Traffic Manual on that, and the Manual on Uniform Traffic Control Devices, and I don't have that size off the top of my head.
Through the chair, so there is a size that we're going to be talking about here.
Through the chair, Representative Rauscher, and I apologize if I mispronounced your name.
That's okay.
But the sign is dependent upon the amount of text that's on it. So a veteran with a longer name would require a larger sign.
And then through the chair, is only the name of the veteran allowed on the sign, or are other remarks allowed on the sign besides the name of the veteran?
Through the chair, Representative Rauscher, that is not identified in that bill, and the bill does say that the department will develop I believe it says that the department will develop that policy. So I can't answer exactly what would be on that sign right now. I can come back to you with that information.
I appreciate that. And through the chair. Is there more than one name allowed on the sign?
Through the chair, the bill is not specific on that, but it identifies that the department will sign in accordance with the legislative commendation. So there would, but the manual and uniform traffic control devices in the Alaska Traffic Manual does not have a prohibition of putting more than one name.
Okay, and I think one more question through the chair. It's dependent upon the money coming in from, I guess, who's ever sponsoring this veteran, correct? And then that's like part A. And so, if so, is it kind of dependent upon whether or not he has friends enough to put up the $2,500 every time the sign is damaged or something?
Through the chair, Representative Rauscher, that is language that's included in the bill that identifies that the department, in the language of the committee substitute, the language says that the department may not unless there's funds present. So I can't speak to who may or may not, but I can tell you that the language under the committee substitute prohibits the department from acting unless there's funds available.
Just one reiteration. So, yeah, and I apologize for the $2,500. I wasn't holding you to that number or anything, but yeah, it is dependent upon more money coming in for a sign repair from somebody who is actually wanting to sponsor or re-sponsor the sign from now on, correct?
Through the chair, if I understood the question, can you confirm the question was that the maintenance would be subject to the money coming in?
Correct.
Through the chair, Representative Rauscher, yes, and I believe that I don't want to speak to why the language is written that way, but the language says to design, post, maintain all of those pieces. I'm paraphrasing now, but it restricts the department from doing that unless any one of those activities or all of those activities, unless the funding is present.
And through the chair, just to let the record show, I wasn't speaking for or against the bill. I just was just asking questions. Thank you.
Thank you. I got a brief question and then Representative Sponholz. So it says in on page 2, line 23, through gifts, donations, or grants. It can't do anything unless gifts, donations, or grants. So that could be state grants, couldn't it?
Madam Chair, can you refer me to the exact line on page 2? I'm sorry.
Page 2, and I hope I have the CS. Yes, I do. Page 2, it is lines 20 through 2, actually, 2 and 23. Actually, it starts on 21. The Department of Transportation and Public Facilities may not, paren 1, design, post, maintain, or replace a sign or other marker unless there is adequate funding through gifts, donations, or grants. So I guess I'm just wondering whether that would include grants from the state.
Madam Chair, I don't believe that the bill is specific on that, and I apologize that I can't answer that question, because that's not an engineering
question.
But I believe that that's a question for finance.
No. Okay. The reason I bring this up is because we had a long discussion in judiciary the other day about fiscal notes. And while I'm not trying to slow down this bill, I note that it has a zero fiscal note, and I'm actually not sure that we can do anything much other than maybe a resolution with a zero fiscal note. That's my concern.
I understand that, and I'm not sure if that was posed as a question. And
it was.
And forgive me that I just don't know how to answer that piece. I can tell you that I was part of the analysis for determining a zero fiscal note, and the reason that it was determined as a zero fiscal note was the language that prohibited us from making any of the activities unless there was other funding provided.
Thank you. And I see that...
Mr. Lessman.
So could you identify yourself for the record?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Good afternoon, committee members. For the record, my name is Mike Lessman. I'm the legislative liaison for the Department of Transportation and Public Facilities. Madam Chair, with all due respect to the fiscal note, the department is reading the bill, the proposal, verbatim. We understand that we cannot take any of these activities without, in terms of design, maintenance, posting, replacing. We can't, our M&O staff cannot take any of those activities unless there's funding coming into the department from outside of state or federal government. So that's why we have a zero fiscal note on the record, Madam Chair. There is another piece of information I wanted to share about the fiscal note. The department has, in all three of our regions, our South Coast region, Northern region, and Central region, we have what's called statutory designated program receipt authority in the budgets for all three of those regions, and that's how these gifts, grants would come in to the department. Since you brought up the word grant, I would suggest that maybe that's a better question for the bill sponsor as to what his intent was. I can't imagine a scenario where the Department of Transportation would grant money to itself to do this work, or I can't imagine a grant coming from another state department to DOT to do this work, but perhaps the bill sponsor can clarify that for us.
So just one more follow-up here with respect to the fiscal note. It seems to say the department estimates the value of time for spending 1 hour per week on list maintenance would be $2,497.4, which would increase annually with merit increases. The number assumes no vetting of the nominations, etc. So I actually don't, and I know I'm being picky here, but that's because we had this long discussion the other day. How can we have a zero fiscal note when things cost? I mean, if you're doing things for one project, either the budget increases or you're not doing it on another project.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm not certain, but I think you may be looking at a fiscal note from the Department of Military and Veterans Affairs. Back to DOT's best analysis of the fiscal impacts of this proposal, our maintenance and operations staff would be out in the field doing this kind of work as a matter of daily, their daily duties, right? We would not forecast that we'd need more staff.
I looked at the wrong explanation analysis. Thank you.
Representative Sponholz.
Thank you. I actually had a question for the bill sponsor regarding the structure, and I think maybe we part of what we might be getting at is more about program design, and I wanted to talk about that a little bit. So if I'm and I have a couple. So if I'm understanding this correctly, it sounds to me, given in the new CS, that we're saying this would that the Department of Military and Veterans Affairs would essentially work with private nonprofit organizations which support and advance veterans, you know, interests and recognition to secure nominations and probably also funding for said memorials. Was that the intention of the bill?
Through the chair. No, the intention
of the bill comes from the request from the veterans organizations themselves, who have identified funding for some signs that they would like to go ahead and put on these veterans' memorials. And the process, and the Department of Military and Veterans Affairs can certainly speak to their analysis, but the process is such that those veterans organizations have current established relationships with the department. They're already recognized by the IRS as veterans organizations. They already have those relationships. And they simply submit a document with a name. Then that is simply passed on to the legislature by the department. So that's the intent of the
Well, in follow-up, it says that that memorials can only be established if there's funding in the form of gifts or grants. I'm presuming, just based on my experience having worked with a lot of veterans organizations, that a veterans organization that was interested in recognizing a particular nominee would put forward that nominee's name, and with the understanding that they likely would be helping to fund that specific piece of signage.
Yes, that's the understanding.
Okay, so essentially what we're allowing the Department of Transportation to do is to work with Military and Veterans Affairs to put up signs to recognize veterans, and specific veterans memorials throughout the state of Alaska, and that this would be done in collaboration with the private nonprofit veterans organizations that would fund that work.
And to clarify, the Department of Military and Veterans Affairs is an intermediary, in effect, between the veterans organizations and the legislature.
Correct.
The legislature is still the one deciding if we're going to recognize any veterans or all veterans or no veterans.
Sure. So just to clarify for everybody, the funding is coming from the private nonprofit organizations that are working with the Department of Military and Veterans to make recommendations to the legislature for signage, which would then, if it was approved, be put up by the Department of Transportation. Have I drawn the cookie crumbs clearly for everybody?
I believe so.
Okay. So I have one further sort of clarifying follow-up through the chair. Thank you. I apologize. You said that this would affect six veterans' memorials in the state of Alaska. Where are those? Could you tell the committee?
Yes. If you would pull up and review statute, and this is the statute the bill is amending. This is Alaska Statute 35.40.035. And there are currently six veterans' memorials listed there, each by paragraph. And you'll find that one of them is here in Juneau. Two of them deal with bridges, and four of them deal with highways. The one here in Juneau deals with a portion of a highway. The one in Eagle River deals with a portion of a highway. The run in the Matsu also deals with a portion of a highway. And then also in Fairbanks, there's another portion of a highway. So those are spelled out in statute, and of course that might change in the future. Those could be gotten rid of, those could be added to, but currently there are six statewide.
Through the chair, could I ask that you send a list of those to the committee members or to the chair that for distribution to committee members so we just know where those are?
Certainly, we'll copy the statute for you.
Okay, Representative Sadler.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Through the chair to, well, first of all, I want to say I do like the idea of codifying in statute the ability for Alaskans to do the right thing and pass the hat to, on their own dime, honor a fallen comrade. I think we shouldn't always look to the state to come across with money, so that's a self-reliance, and I like that. That said, I have two questions. Are there any limits other than the self-imposed limit that the veterans organizations might impose themselves to the number of memorials that might be considered and go through the recommendation chain that Representative Sponholz just described?
I'll take a stab at that through the chair. So the legislature, through law, has established these veterans memorials, and it would take a change in current statute, a new law in effect, to either eliminate one of the six or add to it. Based on the current statute, the department would be able to work with the legislature, who is designating names. So the legislature is, in effect, the one who's deciding whether or not this will ever happen or how often it would happen, and that would be up to the legislature to decide.
Follow up, Mr. Chair? So I think I'm going to speak colloquially for a second. So we've got six areas that are designated as veterans' memorials, and I guess I'm just trying to envision. I certainly know the Eagle River Station. I know other bridges and so forth. So there would be a location or a signpost where there would be a finite amount of space, or is a memorial designated as a certain area, as an intersection? So I'm trying to get to what is the physical or procedural limitation to the number of individual signs that might be posted at any one general location.
Through the chair. Because each Veterans Memorial that currently exists or that might be created in the future is different, we've allowed the department latitude to determine the location, the size, the extent to which a Veterans Memorial might include one name or more than one name. If there was, you know, a spot to build a monument and that was the desire, then there's enough latitude for them to do that. We don't prescribe, you know, size or anything like that.
Okay. To pursue that line, too, I suppose finances, the amount of money that could be generated by gifts or grants would be one limiting factor. The question might arise, if we go down the theoretical chain, what if one group was able to generate $20,000 for one guy who was a very popular first lieutenant, although no first lieutenant was popular, versus someone else who was nominated but couldn't quite get enough money to get a big enough sign? That might be interesting. The second question, I guess, is there any standard, does this bill impose any standard for what would or not justify commendation or recommendation, or is that discretion exercised at the veteran organization level?
Through the chair, no, that's discretion that is organized by the legislature. Whether or not we choose to commend a veteran, that's up to the legislature to determine, and I don't believe there's currently any criteria that limits the legislature and how they go about making that decision.
Last one. So it is conceivable that the veterans organization in any one of our hometowns could come forward with a recommendation and money in hand to build a sign or to add to a veterans memorial, and the legislature could deny that for whatever reasons they might want to. I can't imagine we would, but that is conceivable. Is that correct?
Through the chair, denial would be simply by not acting. Only if the legislature believes that it's in the state's best interest would a veteran be recognized.
Thank you.
Thank you, Representative. Representative Reinbold.
It's probably best that I be quiet today, but I think it is a novel idea, you know, to name after veterans who have fallen. Where my problem comes is I think DOT's primary responsibility is infrastructure and public safety. And I believe we have 75,000 veterans. I would have to check the number. We don't have very many roads. And I guess what bothers me is who and how is it prioritized, and are people going to be alienated and left out that don't get this? Is it I just don't understand how in the world one life is going to be more valuable than another. I mean, in regards to the loss of veterans, because, I mean, we love them, we appreciate them, but I'm just not 100% sure that this isn't going to alienate, you know, many, many veterans. So I guess that's my point.
Through the chair, point well taken. Now, I believe one way of looking at this bill, the question before us is, we have veterans organizations who desire to highlight a veteran or more than one veteran at a time, and that's not meant to be a permanent highlighting. That's only for a period of time, and the legislature can choose to honor different veterans at different times or many or few, but the decision before us is will we act on that request from veterans organizations to give them the opportunity to highlight some veterans that they believe would be worthy of the legislature's consideration.
Mr. Chairman, can I follow up?
Yes, follow up, Representative Rumble.
Okay, so I love veterans' memorials. I visit them often in different places when I go, and I think that is a wonderful, you know, place to stop and honor the veterans. I guess one, I would like to see the letters of these organizations. I don't know if you provided them. I apologize. I got a small bill package today, and I'm not sure if those letters. But one, I would like to see, you know, the letters from these organizations. And are these going to be changed out, you know, for another veteran or another veteran to give equal time? Or I'm just trying to figure out how we're going to recognize the thousands, if not tens of thousands, of veterans in Alaska.
Through the chair. Well, you do have some veterans who are on the line who obviously are interested in this legislation going forward, and I'm sure would be glad to speak to their reasons for doing so or how they might see this taking place.
Okay, thank you very much. Representative Parrish.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. There are a couple of questions which have arisen to me. One seems to address the equity concern raised by Representative Rauscher and now Representative Reinbold. It says that the
initial placement of a sign or marker shall be done in the order of the most recent veteran commended by the legislature under G of this section. So presumably, that's in a batch. And if there have been donations which haven't been linked to a specific veteran under Section H, page 2, line 18 and 19, then they could use those funds, presumably, to pay for others. However, I guess a concern there would be that if the first batch of people commended by the legislature did not have funding associated with their names, and if indeed there were all available funding were associated with other names, what would one do? Because statutorily it seems like they've got a little bit of a conflict. Then you said that these signs are not meant to be permanent, which surprises me a little. And I suppose I'd have to ask if you would also be attempting to raise funds for the eventual replacement or removal, which, you know, heaven permitting, will be a rather trivial cost. Also, if under lines 18 and 19 of page 2, that's under section H of this bill, a donor may request that a gift, donation, or grant be used for a specific veteran's memorial. If someone should say, you know, I know this veteran, I like him, I can only spare $100, but I'm going to send in a check for $100 with the memo field. I want this to be used for so-and-so. How long would the department be expected to preserve that $100 for that specific veteran if no other funds should materialize in the same name? And what might the accounting burden be? I'm afraid I've got another obligation, but I will review this in the future, and I should be delighted to speak with you outside of the committee.
Okay. In the interest of time, we do have another State Affairs Committee meeting that's starting up here in another minute. I know that Representative Parrish just loaded you with a bunch of questions. So if you don't mind, we'll save answers to those questions to the next public hearing on this. And then at that time, we'll take public testimony. So we're going to put this bill aside right now. Our next hearing will be on Tuesday, January 30th, and we stand adjourned at 3:02 p.m.
Thank you.